Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Deb Coates. Deb, welcome. It's so wonderful to finally have you with me.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. It's good to be here. I'm happy to be here with you in this odd moment of COVID-19.
Indeed. As I was thinking about this, I realized that I don't really know very much, if anything, about your origin story. So where did life begin for you, Deb?
I was born in Albany, Oregon. That's where I went to elementary school, junior high, Kalapulya, and Albany Union High School. So my start was in the central Willamette Valley. My dad was a farmer originally. My grandpa was a farmer. And so I'm a third generation Oregonian.
And it sounds like you stayed in one spot for most of those growing up years. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I didn't go away from home until I went to Heston College in the middle of Kansas. And I loved leaving for a bit, but I'm a Northwest person at heart because when I was at Heston in Kansas, I became claustrophobic because the sky was so big. It felt like a bowl had been put over me, and I missed the mountains and I missed the trees. So I was happy to come home, but I've lived also in Alaska, the far north, as far north as there's an establishment. And I lived north of the Arctic Circle for 2.5 years after college, then went back to Eugene. I graduated from the University of Oregon with a double degree in sociology and psych. And then from there, Don and I went to the far north. It's the northernmost establishment on the North American continent.
We will get to some of those in more detail in a minute. But going back to your origins, how many siblings in the family and where do you fit?
I am the oldest of 5 children. My mom and dad had 3 children within 3 years' time. Then they took a wee bit of a break and had a second group of a brother and a sister that I'm 10 years older than the youngest.
Since it's the fall going into the winter season, can you give me some idea of what you did for fun in Albany, Oregon as a child during, say, this time when we're getting into Thanksgiving, Christmas season?
Oh, yes, I can. We played outside all the time, just about year round. And I loved picking up nuts. We had a bit of a filbert orchard. And so I got to spend a lot of time outside. I loved the leaves, the smell of the leaves. And we just played outside a lot, jumped in the leaves, big piles, and played in the barn and walked the creek, had fall picnics in the Christmas time. We went out and got our own Christmas tree. And I think some of these activities were because my mom just plain wanted us outside.
And since you grew up on a farm, were there some chores that you were responsible for, either around the farm or in the house? Or
I have fond memories of going out with my dad to milk the cow. And so that was kind of fun. And my very earliest memory is when I was 2.5. My dad and mom gave me a bummer lamb, one of those lambs that's rejected by their mom. And my job was to feed that lamb, and I loved it. And so outside chores, mostly all my chores were inside, and it involved dusting on Saturdays and cleaning the bathrooms every Saturday. And we washed all of our sheets, so everything was clean and pure for Sunday morning.
Because what happened on Sunday morning?
Well, we had cinnamon rolls every Sunday morning. It was sort of our own little family ritual. And my mom made them every Saturday afternoon. And on Sundays, we always had cinnamon rolls. Or maybe if we were lucky, my dad loved donuts. We would have donuts. And the only real rule I ever had growing up, all the way through my teenage years, was that I could stay out as late as I wanted, as long as Sunday morning I came to the table with no curlers in my hair, and I was pleasant. And so it worked. I said to my mom once, why in the world did you make that the rule? She goes, we lived 14 miles from town. What were you going to do? There was nothing for you to do. So now I must say that rule did not work so well with my younger brother and sister, but it worked for me. And I remember early memory on the way to church, and maybe other people have this too, but have you ever had a spit bath where your mom takes her hanky and she wipes that face down on the way to church? That never happened so much with me, but it certainly did with my brother. He was always on the go. And I remember.
And this hanky that she used was one she carried with her, and it was made out of cloth.
Yes. She always had a hanky. We call them hankies, not handkerchiefs. And yeah, she always had one. And an interesting thing is when I was 12 years old, my grandma Yoder, who lived in Iowa, gave me a beautiful handkerchief for my 12th birthday with a Christmas card with carnations on it and little sparkly diamond-like crystals. I still have the card and I still have the handkerchief. Oh, an interesting fact about my origin story is that I was born on my mom's birthday, January 12th. And then you talk about this time of the year, she actually died on Christmas Day. And so this is this autumnal season is one of, while I love the smells of the fall and Christmas, it also becomes a deeply reflective time for me because my birthday's on January 12th. So there's just a lot of things to celebrate and think about. And that's part of my origin story. Yeah. And the electricity went out on the day I was born, and she was at Albany General Hospital wondering, are we doing this? Yes, we were doing it. So it was a rare, rare winter storm for the Willamette Valley. I think it was great to come in with a bang.
How old was your mother on the day that she gave birth to you?
She was 24.
Mm-hmm. And going back to this hanky that your mother carried, was that something that kept you occupied in church by any chance? Did you make things out of that handkerchief?
Not so much from her, but my grandmother Zare, my dad's mom, gave us handkerchiefs. And I think it was with her sitting on the front, well, on the woman's side, which would have been the left side of Fairview Mennonite Church. She taught me how to make a little rockabye hammock with two little twins in it. So we were always doing that in church. So yeah. Oh, Gloria, you're good. This handkerchief business is fun to think about. And my grandma Zare also gave all of her granddaughters a handkerchief with tatting on the edges of it. So I have one from my grandmother Zare too. And I know right where it's at. I know where both of them are at. And an interesting thing about my mom, she always had a handkerchief in her pocket. It didn't matter if it was an apron, a dress, her slacks, her coat, oh my goodness, or maybe a Kleenex later, but always a handkerchief. Yeah.
What else do you remember about those church services? Was there Sunday school?
Yeah, there was Sunday school. At Fairview, it was so different than Albany. And oh my goodness. Yeah, hellfire and brimstone. That's what I remember. I remember seeing spit coming forth. I won't name the minister because I just don't feel like that's appropriate. But you know what that led to? Playing church at home on the farm. My sister loved to preach. My sister that's 2 years younger than I am. And she loved to preach a real fiery, hot sermon. So I have a lot of fun memories about that too. And my brother sat there like a good sport, and I guess I did too. She must have been very entertaining because she did keep our attention. Yeah.
So is it safe to say that in your real church that women were not allowed to be preachers?
Correct. That did change. When I was entering high school, it began to change. But, you know, there are a lot of strange things about those days, and I'm so grateful for all the matriarchs that went before me. And I think that there's sort of a generation that we're losing here where the women had the courage to say, enough is enough. And so I was baptized, and I have a covering, which I have, and I have my grandma's covering, and I have my grandma's little doily thing. and one of her black cats too. I think these are important things for me to have in touch and remember how far women have come, how we've begun to find our voice. And it's valuable, it's valued, and I appreciate that. But women could teach Sunday school, women could lead music, and they maybe could read scripture. But there was, I never saw a woman preach, ever, not in a formal situation with men involved. But my mom, who was very, very active at Albany Mennonite Church, and she was the president of WMSC, which is what the women's group was called way back when. And I remember one time just getting to go and sit around the quilting frame with her and the group. And they were actually making all the decisions about things. And so behind the scenes, you could see that they played a powerful role in the direction of the church and influenced it greatly. And I did have good leaders that I could emulate there. Georgie Kennel is one of them from my mom's days. And there are others, too, that I could name. Bernetta Stutzman was a good friend of my mom's. And that is Kelsey Knight King's grandmother. That was her grandmother. So these are wonderful things to think about and remember, Gloria. Thank you. But yeah, church was way different. It was way different.
I'm just intrigued because your sister, who was preaching Hellfire and Brimstone at home, had not necessarily ever seen a woman do that before, but that didn't stop her.
Correct. Yeah. And now she lives on Kodiak Island, far away. And she's still a very deeply spiritual person, although there's no Mennonite in sight. And she attends a Catholic church because that's what's there.
Let's just get her name just for the record.
Her name is Colleen Nevin, and we called her Cokie.
You went to public school throughout your growing up years?
Yes, yes. All my years, then Heston College, then the University of Oregon, did a little bit of grad work there.
How did you decide that you were going to go to Heston College in Heston, Kansas?
They offered me a great scholarship. I also was enthralled with the music program. Mr. Beiler was there at that time. It was a recognized choral program. So I thought at one time of majoring in music. Yeah, I had been recruited to go to Western Mennonite School, but it was just too small for me. And my high school graduating class had 500 kids in it. And from that experience, I wanted a small school experience. And after being in Heston for 2 years, I wanted a university setting. So back to the University of Oregon. Mm-hmm.
So when you went to Heston, is it safe to say that that was the first time that you had spent any amount of time away from home?
Yeah, extended. I mean, I went to camp. We either went to Iowa in the summer, and then my grandma and grandpa came back out the next summer or winter. So every other year we did lots of traveling, actually. But as far as extended absence, yeah, that was my first time.
And how did that feel? Were you excited? Was it a little panicky? What was that like for you? Do you recall?
It was exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. I was excited and I welcomed new adventure. And maybe that's because my mom really welcomed adventure and things. She grew up in Kelowna, Iowa, actually Joetown, a little tiny burg, a wide spot in the road. My grandpa owned a sawmill and a hardware store and a general store. And so anyway, she met my dad. They took a train out to visit her brother, who was in Albany and had married an Oregonian. And they were there for 6 weeks. And she met my dad on the first Sunday night because he asked her to go to the youth. Evidently, the youth had gatherings or something on Sunday night. And she came back and said she had a date with Lloyd Zare. And my uncle said, well, that Lloyd Zare takes everybody out. Don't be too excited about it. And 6 weeks later, they were engaged. And they wrote letters to each other every day for a year. And I said, wow, why would you do that, Mom? I don't think you'd think that would be so great for me. And she goes, but you know what? I got a letter every day. He got a letter every day. And I believe we got to know each other better through letters than if we'd seen each other once a week. And yeah, but nobody can find the letters now. So
that was the next question.
I knew where they were once, and we found them once, and my brother took off running, and my mom ran really, really fast. They were tied up with a pink and green ribbon, which were the colors of her wedding. But we never got to read any of them. And nobody quite knows where they're at right now, so they're probably gone. It'd be fun to read them. But I also have her diaries. Oh my goodness. She kept diaries. She started writing in them when she was 6 or 8 years old, and all the way up until the year that she died. There are some blank spaces, and I don't know exactly what that means. They might have been more unpleasant times in her life, but it is amazing to go back and read these. And I've never sat down and read them all the way through, but occasionally during a season or something like that, that I know is important to her or maybe me, I go back and I read them. Oh my gosh, Gloria, there's nothing like this. What you're doing, writing letters, we must keep writing letters to each other. We must.
Those are an absolute treasure.
They are. And it's kind of neat to be the oldest and to have been born on your mom's birthday, because then my sisters say, Deb, you really should have these because I treasure them. Maybe they think they're just too disposable, that they'd be dust collectors, but for me, they're not. I love touching these things. It's like touching the coverings or the hankies. Touching these diaries is like touching the spirit of my mom, the person that time. Even receipts. I sometimes think we should save receipts. We're so quick to just throw everything away because it's a window. It's a marker of a life, an important being in this world.
Thank you for the advertisement for my business.
You are so welcome. I will do one for you anytime. I think it's so important.
And since we're doing that, I'll just say that the name of it is Real to Real, R-E-A-L to R-E-E-L. But I do want to go back and just note that we have five senses, and it strikes me as you're talking that touch is one of those that we don't talk or think about very often. Maybe it's because it's so utilitarian to us, but I love what you're bringing forth.
Yeah, I think touch is really important. And maybe that comes because I love fibers and I love touch. And I had no idea. To me, these stories are funny and humorous. But there's an artist called Deidre Scherer, who's a sociologist specializing in gerontology. She said part of the reason that touch is so powerful and that fabric is so important is it's one of the first things that touches us when we're born. We're wrapped in cloth, and it's the last thing that touches us when we die. And there's great power when we think about that. Touch is an amazing thing. And I think maybe our tradition, we're a little uptight about touch. Unless we're talking quilts, then that's okay. Or comforters for MCC, that's okay. But we really don't talk about the power of touch and what that does to the person as a whole. So I'm with you on this five senses thing. And another one I discovered recently is the power of smell. Our memory, what are our memories as they regard smell? And it comes back to cinnamon rolls, okay? So I was at Heston and I was feeling like something's wrong. It was a Saturday and I'm going, what is going on? I don't really miss my siblings. I don't really miss Albany. What am I missing? I was missing the smell of cinnamon dough rising and then baking. I longed for that connection to home, and it was related to smell. And I stopped and I did a journal just recently of memories of smell and how important they are. Some people, some scientists believe that smell is the most important sense that we have in terms of connecting to important times in our lives. think Christmas tree, you know, we don't get to smell Christmas trees on the first Sunday of Advent walking into Portland Mennonite Church. So how will we experience that in our homes this year? Oh, on and on I go.
So just finishing up Heston, that is a two-year college. You went there for 2 years. What degree did you come out with?
Associate of Arts, Liberal Arts, yeah.
And then you said you were ready to go back to the West.
Yes.
What happened next? Did you go instantly to the university or did you take a break? What happened next?
I went instantly to the University of Oregon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lived at home for a year, and then Don and I were married. I had one term left. And then we were married, and Eugene, and then Junction City, and then, no, Barrow, then back to Eugene, and then Junction City, back to Anchorage.
Talk about this time in Alaska. It sounds like you've lived there several different times in different places. What was the draw? What took you to Alaska?
Well, the first time it was a job. I mean, career starting kinds of things. Teaching, there were lots of teachers at that time for Don. And he said, let's just go to Alaska. Let's go try it. His sister and her husband were in Anchorage. And we thought, oh, we could land there. Oh, gosh. How we got there? Oh.
Please.
Okay. So the forest industry, Don had planted trees. He'd get up at like 4:30 in the morning. I never liked breakfast. Don't make me eat breakfast. But then he had to be up so early. I started making him breakfast because he was a tree planter and worked with the Hodads. And there's another whole long story about who the Hodads are in Oregon. And anyway, he planted trees. I learned to like breakfast because he was eating breakfast. And then we decide we're going to go to Alaska, and we bid on a forest van. It was a 1962 Dodge panel, they're called. We retrofitted it with recycled cedar wood, and I made curtains for it, and we made a platform, and we took off to Alaska and drove what's called the Alcan Highway. It's not the paved highway. It's the one where you have to plan and have all your gas and measure how far you're going to be, and followed something called a milepost because there was no serious map available to the public. So we followed the milepost that told you mile by mile where things were, where services were. And one time we came, it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, and we came to a T in the road, and we didn't know which way to go. And we had to wake up. The logger people were sleeping because they got up so early. And keep in mind, this was in June when the sun never really went down. It did, but not very much. And anyway, they weren't real happy with us, but they pointed us, they just kind of stuck their head out and their arm and said, that way. Okay, thanks. So, you know, we came to places with water across the road. We stopped at Kitwanga and Kitwankool and talked to villagers there. Lots of memories going up. Oh, yeah, Don tried to be brave. We saw a grizzly bear across the field, and he said, I'm going to go take a picture. He, little known fact, Don's quite the photographer and was the photographer for his school paper, all that stuff. But anyway, I said, no, do not get near the grizzly bear. And the grizzly bear gets up on his hind legs and does the whole thing. And he got a good picture, but I was not very happy. Grizzly bears, you don't want to mess with a grizzly bear. No. And he tells the story. But Deb, all you have to do is just act big and strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Easier said than done for some of us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else
were you? So you were headed there because he had a teaching job?
Well, no, he didn't have a job. No, we just took off and thought, okay, let's go look for a job then. Okay, can you imagine?
And what year might this about have been?
Do we really have to say? Okay, 1976.
Just to give us some sense of what the world was like.
Yeah, in the mid-70s. And we get up there, and of course there were different boroughs who were interviewing, and we met with Shirley Holloway who was the school district superintendent of the North Slope Borough. And she says, we'd love to have both of you there. We have a job for you, Deb. I developed a preschool. They didn't have one yet. And the borough had lots of money. And so I could pretty much do whatever I wanted. And he taught second grade. And away we went. We lived in school housing. This is an interesting thing, I think. We lived in school housing. It was over a mile walk to our classrooms or offices. And it was totally inside. The buildings are set on what they call pilings, and they just dig a hole and then they fill it with water and then it freezes around the piling. And that creates the foundation. That's what holds the building up, but it never thaws. It never thaws. I have lots of stories about Alaska. But another one is in the winter one time, the famous most story of all is when it's dark, and now it would be totally dark up there. And it's not light again. The sun does not rise again until sometime in January. And there's always a big party then. And even then, it's only up for a minute or two. But there was a teacher who went home and took a nap and woke up at 9 o'clock and went, oh my gosh, I'm late. I'm late for my class. Went down to the classroom, realized, well, nobody's here. What's the deal? Oh, it's PM, not AM, because there was no reference to the time with light. But summer's awesome up there because the sun just does this wonderful little circle thing. And I'll never forget watching kids at 2 a.m. in the morning doing their blanket toss on their big skins. And it was just fun. When we first got there, it was very difficult because they had been studied so much. The Inupiat people had been studied so much, and all the suits and brown legal briefcases were coming in, that they did not really want to engage with you until you had been there a while. And so a lot of people can't survive past the first Christmas, but we did, and we loved it. And we had tatuliks made. Those are not muckluks. They are tatuliks, and they are a soft skin boot and the fur's on the inside. And so walking on snow is like walking on sand, and it's wonderful. Oh my goodness, so many stories about Alaska and the wonders of it. But it's also the first time that I experienced as a white person what it means to be the recipient of hate just because of the color of my skin and that I look different. I was pushed and I had a young woman spit at me, and all I was doing was standing in a crowd at a high school event. But it was okay. You know, it was an informative moment and helped me understand and have more empathy for people of color and Indigenous people. I have a love for Indigenous people. So,
and did you know that that's why it was happening to you at that time? Did you know that it was because of the color of your skin when it was happening?
I did, because it was before Christmas and we had been warned there was a certain amount of training that there is potential for a difficult time. But I'm short and not as tall, and so I think it was just the way it was. I'd never seen this person before or had any interaction with her. So, but we've gotten to eat muktuk and we got to celebrate in the pulling in of a whale. They're known as the people of whaling. It's their lifeblood. And so, you know, I've seen a walrus float on an ice floe. What? Who does that? And we had a snow machine, and we loved to go little jaunts out to Browerville, which was a little village even further north. And once there was a polar bear out, and the Tunics, or white people, were not allowed to carry guns or defend themselves against polar bears. And polar bears are the only bear that actively seek humans. And I remember coming back one night, the warning was out, hey, there's a polar bear. We spotted him out there. So y'all just be careful getting home. But you know what? We also saw northern lights on that trip. We saw them a lot. And did you know that they can make a sound? They can sing. It's kind of a ooh sound, and it changes depending on the air currents and the time of the year. But they're wonderful to see. Oh, Gloria, you're so good.
Well, Deb, believe it or not, it's been a half hour already.
I know. Oops, I touched my face.
And I feel like we just barely touched the tip of the iceberg, specifically in your case, literally. But there may have to be another time, or we'll just have to sit down and talk sometime. And hopefully we've stirred some thoughts for others. So Deb, thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your wonderful insights.
You are so welcome. It's been delightful. And let's talk more about women and heads and coverings and things we've put on our heads. And now we don't. Yay!
It's a deal. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.